It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Welcome to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com, presented by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. It's the usual players, Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma, and we have a bench player today as well. He'll be getting into the game right now. That's Mark Gonzalez from the Chicago Tribune. You could follow him at MDGonzalez on Twitter. Mark, thanks for jumping aboard today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. I should mention he is the White Sox beat reporter for the Tribune. First thing for me, Mark, as the Yankees are going to embark on a series with the White Sox next week, they went, up until their win against Tampa Bay, they went 51 consecutive innings without the lead, which really relates to 5.5 games. What's been the problem with the White Sox during that stretch up until they broke their losing streak with that win?
I think it's been a lack of clutch hitting and in some cases a lack of the top of the order setting the table. Early in the season, Juan Pierre and Gordon Beckham were hitting well, getting the pitcher in the set position, and guys like Paul Konerko and Carlos Quinton were driving them home. That hadn't been the case during the losing streak. It's been all up and down throughout the order with few exceptions, so it's almost been like the perfect storm for this offense.
All right, and now the next stop for them before they come to New York is in Detroit. So what can they look to build on when they go to Detroit? What do you think they have to work on to get back on the winning track here?
I think situational hitting, they were so good at it last year, and they were good for the first 7 games. That's kind of gotten away from them. When they were slumping, they were trying to do too much. You could see them pressing. They had a case Tuesday night in Tampa where they had the tying run at second with one out, and Dunn and Konerko coming up, and both guys struck out. So you could tell they were maybe pressing a bit. Dunn's timing's been off since he missed 6 games with the appendectomy. But I think they got to hitting the clutch and take pressure off everybody, especially the starting pitching, which has been pretty good so far.
A guy that I have to bring up because he is to me, he's a modern marvel. That is Omar Vizquel. He just seems to never get old. I'd like to know what he's taking because I would like some of whatever he's taking. What are your impressions of him so far this season?
He's been fantastic. He's started about 5 games, and each game he's contributed offensively as well as defensively. I mean, this guy's a marvel. He takes great care of himself. He comes to spring training in shape. He works harder. He knows that now that he's, I think he's going to be 44 now, that he has to take better care of himself. He does a terrific job of doing that. He plays third and second. He's a jack of all trades on this team.
Very versatile, and I tip my hat to him because, as you said, he takes very good care of himself. He's still out there, and he's going to be 44, and he's not a 44-year-old that's just hanging on. He's still a very vital part to what the White Sox are trying to do this year. And let's talk about that AL Central a little bit here. The White Sox, as we tape this, 8-11 as they head into Detroit before they come into New York. But right now, Mark, you have Cleveland and Kansas City on top of the division. This division is completely up for grabs, don't you think?
Absolutely, and the White Sox can take solace in that. Despite the 7-game losing streak, they don't have a huge amount of ground to cover. And Minnesota can feel the same way. So it's a real goofy division right now because we saw Cleveland first series of the season. The White Sox took 2 out of 3 at Cleveland and hit the snot out of the ball. And since then, Cleveland's gotten their act together. And Kansas City's always been a pesky opponent for the White Sox. So this division might be very fluid throughout the whole year.
Jake Peavy, a bit of bad news. I saw the other day he had to come out of a minor league appearance. What's the latest, if you could tell us, on Jake Peavy?
His hope is that he'll resume his rehab assignment on Thursday, either at AA Birmingham or AAA Charlotte. The bottom line is he's had another speed bump. It's going to set him back probably till mid-May if he's lucky, because he's continued to have a little setback. He'll make some progress, get stretched out to like 80 pitches, and then have a setback. And he wants to come back where he can throw 100 pitches and back-to-back starts before he rejoins the White Sox. He just hasn't cleared that hurdle yet.
Do you think, from what you've seen and what you've heard so far, that he can come back and be a productive part of that rotation?
I think so, but they can't expect him to be the Jake Peavy that he was with San Diego. He just doesn't have, I believe, that velocity where he's throwing 94 consistently. Can he pitch effectively? Sure, because he's had a great slider. He showed that before the injury, the latest one, when he had to break some scar tissue that caused some irritation. But he's going to have to be more creative, sort of like the way Freddie Garcia is with the Yankees. Not with the such low velocity, but he's going to have to be that type of pitcher, I believe.
How about those two question marks coming in with the Yankees in camp, and they're pretty much exclamation points so far in Cologne and Freddie Garcia, two former Chicago White Sox. One more before I hand it over to my partner, and that's the manager you cover on a day-in, day-out basis, Ozzie Guillen. How much of an adventure is it, or maybe isn't it an adventure, when you cover this guy on a daily basis?
It's an adventure, and you just can't leave him because you never know what he's going to say. But he does know the game. He loves to bunt. He loves to put his players in a position to succeed. And he's always going to give you an opinion. And that's all you can ask as a member of the media.
Hey, Mark, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Good, Joe.
Now, I just want to ask you about this team in general. You know, coming out of spring training and now, you know, 19 games into the season, what do you think this team can build upon for the rest of the season?
I think the fact they weathered a 7-game losing streak, they did it with Adam Dunn, first of all, missing 6 games, and then subsequently really struggling with his timing. I think once he gets his timing back, this lineup is really going to stretch out pretty well. And I think that's something they have to build upon and get their bullpen back in order as well.
Yeah, that's a question I was going to ask you. You know, the bullpen right now, 2-4, 4.56 ERA. You know, they haven't really been effective, you know, closing out games. And, in fact, Ozzie Guillen did go on a little bit of a rant earlier in the season saying, you know, I don't have a closer. So what can you say about the guys in the back end of the bullpen? And is there any one clear-cut guy that is going to take that closer spot and kind of run with it the rest of the season?
Well, they went over a week since his little tirade without having a save opportunity.
Right.
I think the two guys that come to the forefront are Sergio Santos, who hasn't allowed a run this season and even in spring training, and Jesse Crane, two right-handers, have been pretty strong. But I think in the end, it'll probably be Chris Sale as well as Sergio Santos. I think Matt Thornton proved he's one of the premier left-handed setup men in baseball, and I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back to that role again.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I know Chris kind of touched upon the AL Central, but, you know, the Minnesota Twins are having their problems with, you know, Joe Mauer now out, and the Cleveland Indians are playing, you know, great baseball right now, as well as the Kansas City Royals. How do you see this division kind of shaking out this season?
I think it's going to be fluid, like I said earlier, because everybody's got an issue in this division.
Yeah.
You know, the White Sox gave away games early with the blown saves. The Tigers are hot and cold. You know, they're playing better on the road, which helps them quite a bit, especially after what they went through last year with their struggles. The Twins have a lot of mysterious injuries going on. There's also a few guys over there in contract years.
Yeah.
This doesn't have the same Twins feel that it has in the past, where you knew they were going to make their run in the second half. I'm very curious to see how this plays out with them. And Cleveland certainly has surprised everybody. They're going to mess with people. I don't think they're going to sustain the success. And the Royals, I think, the same deal.
Right, right. Now, you know, coming into next week, the Yankees and the White Sox have a big 4-game set, all at the big ballpark in the Bronx. And what can Yankee fans, you know, expect? Like you said, they have a good lineup. Once Adam Dunn gets clicking, you know, Konerko is still Konerko. And What can the Yankee fans expect to see with this road team coming in next week?
This is a pretty deep lineup. I know they haven't played well at the new Yankee Stadium, but this lineup stretches out pretty well, and I'm curious to see if Dunn gets his stroke back by then and see if he can take advantage of the short right field porch, because they're going to have to score runs to keep up with the Yankees.
Yeah, they are. I don't know. I know you cover the White Sox on a day-to-day basis, but so far, what's been your biggest surprise in baseball, throughout the league? What are you seeing throughout baseball where you're saying, wow, that I can't believe that that's happening in baseball right now?
I think overall the problems that teams are having with their closers, it's been very alarming. I know Joe Nathan came off a serious injury, but to see him, pretty much give up his closing duties so soon was pretty alarming, although I think he did the right thing. Cincinnati and the National League, they've had some relief issues as well, and the White Sox we all know about. This goes to show what a tough job it is getting those last three outs of the game.
Mark, it's funny you say that, because the other night Mariano Rivera blew his first save of the season, came into the game, gave up the two runs and the lead against the Blue Jays, and Yankee fans were on edge. Oh, my God, what's going on with Mariano Rivera? My argument to them is, I don't think you understand how lucky you are to have a guy like Mariano Rivera, who's the greatest closer in the history of baseball, pitching at the back end of your bullpen, because there's so many other problems in baseball right now.
Yeah, and it's everywhere. I look around and see teams everywhere. It's not just the White Sox, and for Rivera to blow only one save, it's pretty fortunate, especially when you got a fallback guy like Soriano who can spell him on occasion. That's a nice guy to fall back to.
Now, I know there was a lot of questions coming into the season about the Yankees' rotation. From the outside looking in, what have you seen from the Yankees that you're a little surprised by, or that there could be a problem down the road, just kind of looking from the outside?
I'm very surprised at the reliance on Bartolo Colon and the fact he's done so well with this point. I think if Bartolo can give him 15 to 20 starts, that's getting a lot of mileage out of him. It's no secret this guy loves to throw his fastball, and when he locates it well, he's definitely an effective pitcher. Freddie Garcia doesn't surprise me at all. Guy adds and subtracts with the best of them. He's actually probably their funnest pitcher to watch because he's so creative out there.
He really is. He doesn't rely on the hard fastball, the big stuff, and that's something that right now one of the Yankee pitchers in Phil Hughes is really struggling with. His velocity is down. He's more of a power pitcher, but Freddie Garcia has been fun to watch. One more question from me, Mark, and it's a Yankee related question. I know that a lot of the years that you guys saw what Curtis Granderson was able to do with the Tigers in your division, you saw him, 18 times a year. But Yankee fans, didn't get to see what Curtis Granderson was really about because he struggled at the beginning of last season. His power has come back, and he's really been a big producer, the last 3 months of the year and the beginning of this year. So what can you say about the time that you saw Curtis Granderson and what Yankee fans have to look forward to in a player like that?
He's a guy that's always going to find a way to beat you. We saw it with the White Sox where he got a big hit to win an extra inning game when the White Sox thought they had him down. They were down at the last strike with two outs, and he came up with a big hit off Jenks 2 years ago. This guy always finds a way. His defense is solid. Yeah, he strikes out a little more than you'd like, but he's a guy that's always going to do something to help you win a game, whether it's with his glove or his bat or his legs.
Mark, it's a shame there's nothing going on in the Windy City right now. The Bulls, the Blackhawks about to come back and beat the Canucks. I'm sure everyone is hoping out there that that happens as well, the defending champs. What are your thoughts on some other things going on in Chicago? Do you think the Bulls have what it takes to get back to the finals, and do you think the Blackhawks could come back and beat the Canucks being down in the series the way they were?
Well, I think it's pretty funny with the Bulls because they finished so strong to win that top seed. And there's a lot of momentum going now. The question will be, assuming they get past the Pacers, and they should, is whether they're equipped enough to get by the teams that are really going to stand in their way, like the Heat, the Magic, the Celtics, whether their starting five can overcome, say, the big three from the Heat or with the Celtics with Garnett and his group. I think that's going to be the big issue. But so far, Derrick Rose didn't even have a good game Thursday night, and he still found a way to hit the winning shot. And I think they really feed off that, especially when he struggled for most of the game. I think they're equipped to go to the finals. With the Blackhawks, you know, they made so many changes from last year that I think it's kind of asking a lot for them to come close to duplicating what they did last year. But they've come back from 0-3 to win the next two games, and you know, who's to say they can sustain this momentum? I mean, they're really taking it to the Canucks these last two games, and I think they have nothing to lose right now.
Absolutely. You can never count out the heart of a champion, and that's what the Blackhawks are doing right now. So the best of luck to everyone in Chicago and their teams getting through the playoffs, because we know the Knicks are going to have a little bit of a problem without Chauncey Billups and Amari Stoudemire, if that's the case, especially tonight against the Celtics at home. Even though the game is at home in the Garden, it's going to be tough if those two aren't in the lineup for the Knicks, because Carmelo Anthony can't do it by himself, and that's what he's basically had to do. Anyway, Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune, the beat reporter for the Chicago White Sox, we thank you immensely for joining us here on the Off the Wall podcast, which again is brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV, call 1-800-DIRECTV. Mark, thank you very much. And again, one more time, you can follow him at MD Gonzalez on Twitter. Mark, thank you, sir. It was a pleasure.
Take care, guys.
All right, take care.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the 2-time Emmy Award-winning video content at YesNetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast, brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. 1-800-DIRECTV is the phone number there. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma. We want to thank Mark Gonzalez once again, Chicago Tribune beat writer for the Chicago White Sox, jumping aboard. Give us some time. The Yankees start a series with the White Sox that starts on Monday, and it's a 4-game set at the stadium before they welcome in the Toronto Blue Jays to the Pinstripe Palace, and that is next week or this week, depending on when you're listening to this. Joe, the Yankees so far, you know, I really have no complaints. I know Mariano blew a game, but as you brought up with Mark, it really isn't that big of a deal. I mean,
he's human.
To be as corny as, you know, Duke from Rocky IV, he's not a machine. He's a man. His cutter, as David Cohn said the next day on Yankees batting practice today, he said, you know, it's not going to be a lot of times where you see Mariano Rivera have a flat cutter just sitting over the middle of the plate. He just couldn't locate. And even, you know, starters, Cliff Lee, his last start, battled through it, got through it, and after the game said, you know, I didn't have my best stuff, but I noticed that, and I went from there, and I threw what I thought would get some hitters out, and I got the win. So it happens. It happens to starters, it happens to middle relievers, and it happens to the greatest of all time, Mariano Rivera. So I know people didn't really – I didn't see a lot of reaction on Twitter about that. There was some, but – you know, as you said to Mark in the interview, you know, couldn't put it any better. There's so many problems. And as Mark said as well, there's so many problems with all these closers. You know, the Phillies are using Jose Contreras right now to close games. I mean, think about that. He was a Yankee. You know what he brought to the Yankee table. And, you know, it was pretty much the empty plate. He was okay. He was serviceable. But you know what I'm saying? Jose Contreras is not Mariano Rivera. So you got to pick your spots when you're talking about these things, and I think you hit the nail right on the head.
You know what really bothered me, Chris, was the other day somebody called into the Mike Francesa show, and I brought this up on My Yes Weekly, and they said that Mariano Rivera, maybe it's time for him to lose his spot as the closer of the Yankees, and he was dead serious. I sat there.
Did he call up when he saved 7 out of 7?
But that was the point. And Mike goes, are you kidding me? He goes, I can't even entertain a call like that. It's the most ridiculous thing. But that's the problem. That's, you know, you don't understand what Mariano Rivera is. It's amazing how, you know, and I will say this, 99% of all Yankee fans know what Mariano Rivera is and what he means to this team. Mm-hmm. There's always that 1%. He blows a save. And they did this last year at the end of the year when he had a little bit of a rough patch. Maybe finally these guys have caught up to Mariano.
And what happens?
Exactly. The guy's got a 0.71 ERA in the playoffs. I mean, let's Let's not go there. He's the all-time ERA leader in postseason history. He's the greatest closer of all time. But going back to the Yankees, Chris, I couldn't agree with you more. Hughes has been a big disappointment. Burnett has been better. You know, his last outing, he needs to give them more innings.
He's given them a chance to win, but his last time, even he copped to it after the game with Kim Jones. He said, because she asked him about how the game went, and, you know, they didn't hold on to it, and, you know, Robbie came in and got two big strikeouts, but then the bullpen didn't save him. That was the game that Mariano blew. But he said it. He took responsibility. He said, I need to go deeper. I need to get through that sixth inning. I need to get into the seventh. I need to do this. So he took a lot of that burden. Even though he was in line for the win, he took the responsibility pretty much for the loss. So not only is he pitching better, he's also taking responsibility. And another thing he's not doing is punching walls. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's a different A.J. Burnett. We talked about this with Nick Swisher. Everyone we talked to in spring training, Joe, we brought up A.J. Burnett and what he means to this team. And as everyone has said on Twitter, I'm not the first one to say this, but one of the biggest question marks in that rotation isn't a question mark at all.
No, you're right. And, you know, Joel Sherman came out with an article yesterday. I don't know if you saw this. It was about Phil Hughes and how the Yankees felt like he came to camp a little bit too big. They sent him to the quote-unquote fat farm is what they call it. And you know, Phil Hughes, there, you know, some Yankee officials are saying maybe that's what's causing his velocity, you know, to not be where it needs to be. But, you know, to me, it's just, you know, maybe he's a power pitcher that, you know, just needs to work on, you know, pitching and we're getting that arm stronger. And, you know, when he comes back from the DL, maybe we'll see a different Phil Hughes. Maybe we'll see that 18-game winner and the velocity, you know, between 92 and 95 where it was last year, and then that'll be that.
Well, the big thing with him right now is he's throwing a fastball that's 90. He's throwing a cutter that's 89.
Yeah.
He's got to change speeds. And the thing that baffles me is, you know, you have guys like Andy Pettitte and Mike Mussina probably on your speed dial. You know, if you don't have the velocity, and I know you have a great, not good, great pitching coach in Larry Rothschild, who's going to get the job done with Hughes, but when you have all these things at your disposal, all these great pitchers that come through the Yankees at your disposal, dial them up. You know, if I don't have velocity, how could I win games until I get it back?
You know, it's funny you bring that up. There was a point in his last start, Chris, when I was at the stadium, where in the first two innings, when he was doing well, his fastball actually peaked at 91. Then when he started to get into the third, fourth inning, his fastball was actually at 86, 87. And then he would come back with a changeup at 80. You can't throw an 87-mile-an-hour fastball or an 86-mile-an-hour fastball and then change up your speed with an 80-mile-an-hour changeup. You just can't do it.
You know, I've been around baseball my whole life, and that means I've listened to a lot of analysts in my day. Recently, Al Leiter and David Cohn, and when I listen to these guys, you know, you learn something every day, especially when they're from major league pitchers who've been there, they've been through the battles, they're battle-tested. And when you listen to our great analysts, and I don't want to leave out anybody, so John Flaherty and Paul O'Neill as well, these are guys that have been there. And when they all say the same thing, you know, it's got to be true. You cannot win games as a starting pitcher when you lack velocity and you don't change the batter's eye level and you don't change speeds. And as Joe just said, if you're throwing an 86, 87-mile-an-hour fastball and you come with an 80-mile-an-hour changeup, it's not that big of a drop-off to fool hitters, and it's pretty much like batting practice, and it's not going to be something to watch. But as we said, you know, Hughes is getting it right, and he took the demotion well. It's not really a demotion. It's just a DL stint where he gets his arm strength back. He's in a good state of mind, which is good to see, because you don't want this to take any confidence away from, which it won't. And a lot of, you have to remember, sometimes you sit back and you think, well, geez, he's 29, 30. He's not. He's 24 years of age. He's still a young pup. So It's just a case where he's working on long toss. He's building up arm strength. And the more and more I read about long toss, the more and more I understand that, you know, when you go on these programs, you build arm strength. Look at the Texas Rangers, by the way. And everybody is, you know, Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood scared the bejesus out of GMs and baseball teams everywhere. But nowadays, people might be looking towards what Nolan Ryan is doing in Texas. And we talked about it ad nauseum last year.
You know, Chris, I keep bringing this up, and I'm sure fans are probably saying, well, Joe, stop bringing it up. But like I said, I worked with Jim Cott for a long time, you know, in the booth, in the Yankees booth.
And Jim Cott is, in my opinion, one of the best analysts we've ever had here.
I agree. And the one thing that Jim always said was the only way that you can build up arm strength is to pitch, is to go out and throw. And he did not agree with the rules. He didn't agree with pitch counts. He didn't agree with limiting these guys in the minor leagues. He said there was one year he had a 125-game schedule. His team pitched in the minor leagues, and he pitched 225 innings. I mean, that's...
Well, you know.
And he lasted 26 years, by the way.
Well, people are just, they're scared. I mean, they baby these guys, and the one that doesn't is Nolan Ryan. You know, look at all the innings Felix Hernandez pitches. Yeah. What's he, 24? I just sometimes I don't get it. You have something else there?
Yeah, I got something. I just want to say, you know, I know we're talking about Phil Hughes right now, but one guy that I did want to talk about, Chris, was going back to A.J. Burnett. And the one thing that I kind of got wind of down at the stadium, being there, I'm catching some really good info. And one thing that A.J. has been saying is that he loves Russell Martin catching him. And this is not a knock against Jorge Posada, but he's saying that in previous years, he has that nasty hook. You know he's got that nasty curveball. And he's got his ridiculous fastball. But what was happening is when his curveball wasn't working, he was just trying to get out of things by throwing his fastball. And he always had the changeup, but he never had the confidence to throw it. He said now Russell has him throwing the changeup in situations where he never threw the changeup. Russell has him using it as an out pitch. So when his curveball is not working like it should be working, guess what? He's got another out pitch now. Instead of those guys just waiting on the fastball because they know he's not going to throw the hook, now he's got him off balance again because he's throwing that change and he's throwing it with confidence.
And it's interesting you should bring that up because in spring training when I filled in for Kim and Jack during the game, I interviewed AJ and I asked him about the changeup because he threw it a lot in the game that I filled in for them. And he laughed and he said, you know, I told Russell that I'm a fastball, curveball pitcher. I don't throw a changeup. But it's become such a good out pitch for Burnett and such a good change of pace, if you'll pardon the pun there. But when he has his stuff, if he has all three of those pitches, he's virtually unhittable. Even now, when he doesn't have his stuff, that changeup, that one pitch, brings everything back. And another thing he's brought up with Russell Martin is the fact that, you know, it used to be a merry-go-round when he couldn't throw that curveball for a strike and it was in the dirt or tantalize the hitter near the strike zone with it. Martin blocks almost everything. So not only does AJ have the confidence in the changeup that Martin has given him, he's also got the confidence that Russell Martin is going to block a ball if somebody's on. He doesn't have to worry about what pitch he's going to throw when he's got runners on base, even in, you know, really big-time situations, because he's got not only confidence in himself, he's got confidence in his catcher. So I think that's big as well.
You know, Chris, now we're bringing up Russell Martin. You know, everybody wants to talk about how, you know, Brian Cashman didn't have a good offseason because they didn't get Cliff Lee. Well, you know what? He brought in Russell Martin, who has been very good so far. And he's given them not only good, you know, defense behind the plate, he's been good with the stick. He's back to his all-star form. I mean, it's a small sample size, again. But he's given them more than they could ask for. And you look at some of the other pickups, Andrew Jones has been pretty good so far out in the outfield. And the guy that has really impressed me is Eric Chavez. I mean, this guy, you want to talk about when A-Rod was out, you still have a guy that's a six-time Gold Glover. And the play that really kind of tipped it off for me, where I said, well, this guy's, he's good. He's good. Is when Mariano Rivera was struggling. One out, step on third, and instead of going home where there's no, you know, there's no force. And he went to first, knew he had time, good throw. That's just what you get. And that's the luxury of what the Yankees have. They can have a six-time Gold Glover be a bench player and a backup.
I hate to be Mr. Pun here, but cash has been money. I mean, that bench is, like I said earlier this season, is the best bench Joe Girardi's ever had to go to in his tenure here with the Yankees. That's pretty much going to wrap things up for us. Right before we go, though, I have to say this. You guys can't see us, obviously, but I'm staring at Joe's Devils jersey for some reason. The team isn't even in the damn playoffs, but because my Rangers spit the bit and coughed up a 3-goal lead, this one had to come in with his Devil jersey today. What say you, Mr. Auriemma?
That actually wasn't the reason why I came in with the Devils jersey. I swear, it's not the reason why I came in. I'll tell you why I came in with the Devils jersey. Because it was sitting on top of the clean clothes pile, and I just didn't feel like ironing anything today. I mean, that's truly what it is. I truly didn't feel like ironing. Would I wear a Scott Niedermeyer jersey for any other reason other than that?
Niedermeyer dead. Marmalard. Yeah, whatever. But anyway, it's been, needless to say, it's been a rough week for the fans of the Rangers and the Knicks, which I fall into that category. And
Nick Mannion.
It's, you know, the two games in Boston, as we, you know, we're not going to stay on too much longer. So, you know, you could pretty much, you could shut us off now if you want.
No!
But the Knicks series with Boston, I mean, if I had any hair on my head, I'd be ripping it out. In fact, if I grew a little bit, I would have been in front of a mirror watching the game with tweezers ripping it out of my bald dome. Because, I mean, if you want to take two games from this entire season that you watch from tip to buzzer and just want to not continue to breathe anymore, it was those two games. You take game one, Carmelo Anthony couldn't hit if he had a beach ball and he was throwing it into the ocean. In game two, it was Carmelo Anthony and the Pips, pretty much. He did everything he could to win that game single-handedly. And it just went to show, without Amari Stoudemire on the floor, without Chauncey Billups on the floor in that final 13 seconds, all they had to do was double Carmelo and Jared Jeffries, need I say more. And Mike Vaccaro, the wonderful writer for the New York Post, says on Twitter that the Knicks had some kind of special appearance at Supercuts. And he said, I'm not going if Jared Jeffries is holding the scissors. That's pretty funny. And as for the Rangers, as I just wrap this up, and I'll give it to Joe for some final thoughts. Picture being in high school, okay? And you get into a little altercation, and you leave your midsection unguarded, and someone winds up and punches you directly in the solar plexus, because that's what that double overtime loss to the Capitals did to me. You know, I'm not 17 anymore. I realize that. That was 20 years ago. But my five teams still make me lose sleep at night. They do. St. John's basketball, Rangers hockey, Knicks basketball, Yankees baseball, and Giants football. I lose sleep. And there wasn't, to go through those two Knick losses, the way they lost those games, they could have won both of those games in Boston. All right, I'll give them game one, Ray Allen, clutch, whatever. They could have escaped Boston with two wins, though. And the second one without Amare and Chauncey. But that Ranger loss to the Caps, I mean, Pierre Maguire joined Francesa earlier in the week, and Maguire said the Rangers should be up 3-1 right now. And he's right. They could be up 3-1. But with both of these teams, it shoulda, woulda, coulda. And my last point with the Rangers, it was painful watching them in the third period and both overtime sessions because they look like they had no legs left, A, and they have nobody to go to on offense. Gabarick, forget about it. Vinny Prospel, please go back to Tampa Bay. Please. The one guy who had a great first two periods, Ruslan Fedotenko. He was everywhere. He was everywhere, doing everything for this team. And then, you know, they score three in the second. They give up three in the third. Lundqvist, the first one, he always seems to give up a soft goal. Always. But the thing that really caught my eye, and I'll admit it, I'm not sitting there watching the Rangers every game they play during the season. But I catch them every once in a while. I'm not as diehard as I used to be. But even I could tell. Okay? The casual Ranger fan could tell that they have nothing on offense. I know they scored three goals, but when it came down to crunch time in the third period, when they were back on their heels, most of the game, and you don't believe me? Go back and watch it if you have it on a DVR. Most of the game in the third period, first overtime, second overtime, was spent in the Ranger zone, and it was hard to watch.
Yeah, I actually thought at one point the Rangers might actually score in the overtime because, you know, the Caps would have been taken off guard that the Rangers were even in their zone. I mean, that's I was like, oh, the Rangers might actually pull this one out because, you know, they could catch them on an off chance, on a 3-on-2 chance or a 2-on-1 chance, and the Caps will be completely taken aback by this. But going back to your point and Pierre Maguire's point, Game 2 was not the Rangers game.
No, but 1.
But 1, 3, and 4, they had a chance to win all three of those games.
2, they were outplayed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they should be up 3-1.
And they should be outplayed because the Caps are so much – they're, like, astronomically better. Yeah. They're fundamentally sound. And in the third period in the both overtime sessions until the game ended, they had legs. They had legs. And I got news for you, Rangers fans, and you're not going to like me saying this either, and this is my last one. Bruce Boudreau has a point about the Garden. It's not as loud as the MCI Center. It's not as loud as other arenas. Okay, I've been to the Garden to watch the Rangers. I've been to the Rock to watch the Devils. The Rock is louder. It is. And I'll tell you right now why it is louder. Because the diehard fan is getting pushed out. Pushed out. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. You don't like to hear it, neither do I. The only time that building is loud is when the Rangers have a lead. Other arenas, you listen when their team is down. They're in the game. They're in it. You watch Saturday. The Caps go down 1-0, 2-0, 2-1. They might be silenced for a little bit, but as soon as play starts up, that place will go nuts. It's sad but true.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Mike Medvin and I did witness one of the worst losses in Devils history a couple years ago in the playoffs to the Hurricanes when Brodeur just spit the bit in the last minute 30 seconds of the game. So, and that was a game where the Devils could have advanced the next round. So I feel your pain. I know what you're going through. my team has not been the same since the lockout. That's the bottom line. You know, they were on a heck of a three Stanley Cup run over, you know, in less than a decade. And my team continues to either lose in the first round or, as we've seen this year, they did not make the playoffs this year. They had a hell of a run, but they didn't make the playoffs. And now Jacques Lemaire is not coming back next year. So, I mean, the coaching carousel continues to just, there's no consistency anymore with any system that they have. it continues to be a revolving door. So that's my commentary on my Devils. As far as any other commentary I have, I just want to let you know that Gladys Knight called. She wants some royalties for her using, you know, for you using the pips in your commentary. So, Chris, take that midnight train to Georgia.
I'll get right on top of that. That's it. That's all we got. For Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune, we thank him one more time. And one more time, you could follow him at MD Gonzalez on Twitter. And that's with an S, not a Z at the end. For Joe Riemma, I'm Chris Sheeran. We'll see you next week for another Off the Wall podcast brought to you by DirecTV.